This episode sponsored by Beta Brand, the crowdfunded clothing community and home to such sartorial wonders as dress pant yoga pants and the 30 day dress. Spirit of 608, episode 62. You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it FEST, and it's the future. Hey, hey, and welcome to today's show. Got a really cool show up ahead for you today. It's really focused on helping you with something very, very specific. Have you ever thought about applying to an accelerator program? If you have, this show is for you. If you've wondered whether or not it's the right kind of program for you to get your company involved in, and if you've made the decision that it is, but have wondered what you should keep in mind when applying, this is a show for you. My goal here really is to help you out, is to give you some actionable information and an insider point of view on the application process for really all accelerator programs. But we're going to be talking to a guest today who has a front row seat to a wide array of different accelerator programs. She is Candace Widows, the Chief Operating Officer of the Plug and Play Tech Center. If you're in the tech space, it's likely you've heard of the Plug and Play Tech Center before. It bills itself as the largest global technology accelerator and investor in the world. And as you'll hear Candace and I discuss in today's show, it is a family fund. And we get a little bit of backstory on the family that runs the fund. And they have invested in some companies that, let's just say, have done okay, pretty okay for themselves. And they have invested in some companies that have, you know, done pretty okay. They include Dropbox, PayPal, Lending Club, just to name a few of the success stories that Plug and Play can lay claim to. And while a show about accelerators and the application process involved would be of interest to a lot of people listening to this podcast, because many of you are startup founders and people interested in the tech space, this show is actually inspired by something that is way more festive than just your mere accelerator program. Plug and Play Tech Center is launching a new program this fall. The application window is now open and it's going to be launching in September. It is called the Lafayette Plug and Play, and it is going to bring 10 startups in the fashion tech space to Paris for a three-month program that is all about finding and growing the next generation of fashion and retail companies. Along with Plug and Play, which obviously has deep roots in Silicon Valley and in the tech world. On the fashion side, Group Galeries Lafayette, which is the parent company of a group of upscale French department stores, has come in and agreed to participate in the program and bring their long track record of fashion expertise and retail expertise to the participating companies for this program. So not only is it an opportunity to be in a fashion, tech, retail focused accelerator program, but it's also an opportunity to do this in Paris, which is traditionally thought of as the fashion capital of the world. Along with that, another cool thing about this particular opportunity, they're stage agnostic. So you don't have to be either early stage or farther along or in a more mature state with your company. They're not looking at you based on your stage. They're really looking to get a range of companies in and work with companies they think that they can be good partners with. Now, if your interest is piqued and you want to apply, a couple of things to keep in mind, some key information here, some of the nitty gritty. You can find all of this, by the way, online at LafayettePlugAndPlay.com. I'll just throw a couple of things out there for you now. If you're listening and you're interested, things you should know. The application window is open through August 8th. And then they're going to select and announce the finalists on September 7th. The program launches on September 26th, and there will be only 10 startups selected. So that's it, just a handful, really. Two handful, I guess, right? And the program runs through December 22nd. Now, if you can't apply for the first batch, there is another one coming up. Applications for that will open December 1st, and that program will take place next spring. So there is another chance here on the horizon if the first batch that kicks off in September is not for you. Other things you need to know. If you get accepted, if you're one of those 10 companies, the program will provide you with €25,000 as a seed investment. But for that, you will end up giving a 5% equity stake in your company to them for your participation. As a participant, you'll receive free workspace in Paris so that you can do your work and not have to worry about all of those logistical things when you're moving your operations to Paris, or maybe you'll be in Paris already. But for a lot of the finalists, it's likely that they would be coming from elsewhere to participate. Last but not least, where to apply. Again, you can find everything you need to know at Lafayette Plug and Play, and you'll get a lot of insight into the application process and the company behind this particular program during my conversation that's coming up with Candace. I'm really hoping it'll help you out, not only with this program, but others you may be thinking about applying to in the future. Speaking of helping out, if you want to help out the Spirit of 608, want to help out the podcast, please, please, please subscribe to the show. If you've been listening online via the website, awesome, but it helps the show out immensely if you actually go into iTunes, either on the app that's on your phone, or you go into a listening app such as Stitcher, which is popular with Android phone users, and you actually click subscribe. That way, the episodes will come to you every time a new one goes live, but it also really helps with the show's rankings. It helps other people find the show. Along those same lines, anytime you can leave a rating, like a star rating in iTunes or a quick review, it's a little bit of a tedious process. You actually have to open up iTunes and manually go in there and leave the rating and review. But if you do, it really helps boost the show's reach. It's one of my key focuses for the second half of 2016 to really grow these numbers with the show. Anything you can do to help would be amazing. We've been doing really well. Thanks to you, everyone who is listening. We're exceeding 6,000 downloads a month now, which has been just awesome. But I want to grow that more. Help me double it by the end of the year. Speaking of helping the show, a shout out to Beta Brand, sponsor of this episode and of the show in general. They are the San Francisco-based source for crowd-funded clothing. I'm a big fan of this brand. They're super festive. I love how they combine great style with functional twists and are also shaking up the traditional retail model by relying and leaning heavily on crowdfunding to decide what they make. Less waste, more efficient. As you know, each week I call out a different item, and this week, based on tragic events in Orlando and the celebration of Pride all over the country throughout the month of June, the item I want to point your attention to this week is the Beta Brand Pride Tee. They've got them for guys, they've got them for girls. It's a cool way to show off the rainbow inside of the Beta Brand logo. It's a limited edition, and it's paying tribute to the iconic high-flying flag in San Francisco's Castro District, something I miss seeing as I'm driving around the city. So if you get to see the flag today, give it a wave for me. And when you check out Beta Brand, don't forget to use the code SPIRIT20 and you'll get 20% off anything on the site. Now onto my conversation with Candace Widows, COO of the Plug and Play Tech Center. Candace, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here today. This is a fun episode for me to get to do because it's going to be interesting to talk to you about your background, but then there's also a very actionable, concrete subject area that I want to talk to you about that listeners will be able to use. Many of them are very much interested in working with accelerators and being part of them in the future. And I know that you're going to be able to give us some great information on how to approach that process. To start, I wanted to ask you, just to kind of orient us a little bit, there are a lot of accelerators out there, and there are increasingly fashion retail and fashion technology accelerator programs. I've seen a lot pop up in the last 6 months to a year. Can you tell us a little bit about Plug and Play and how it's different from other programs out there?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few ways that make Plug and Play a little different from all the other programs out there. You know, one is that we've been doing this for a very long time. I've seen a lot of accelerators be flash in the pans. You know, it's a tough business. It's really hard to engage, you know, in these very early stage entrepreneurs. They come and go. You know, you're making these investments, these seed stage investments, and you don't see a return for 5 to 7 years. And so I see a lot of these programs going away. And similarly, there are a lot of corporate run programs, and I've been doing, you know, working with corporations looking for innovation for 8 years now. And there are definitely things I look for. And it's really interesting, you know, it's it's a long game. And a lot of corporate boards just don't have the patience, you know, to wait out. They think innovation will come in the next year or that sort of thing. And so I'd say the fact that we've been around so long really says a lot. We've been really refining the model for many, many years. And, you know, a few of the things that make us unique are the fact that we are so established. We have well over 100 corporate partners. You know, we've been investing for 20 years. We have a really strong track record in terms of our portfolio. Companies like Dropbox have been our most valuable investment to date. Lending Club is another one. PayPal, of course, from the late 90s. And, you know, about 1% roughly of our portfolio has exceeded $1 billion in valuation. About 10% of our portfolio has exceeded $100 million in valuation. So we're really proud of our success. And something that is unique about us compared to others is that not only do we run a retail program here in Silicon Valley, and then now with this new program with Galeries Lafayette in fashion tech, but we have 9 different topics that we're covering right now, you know, ranging from retail to Internet of Things to connected health, travel and hospitality, mobility, new materials and packaging, media, fintech, you know, and there's a lot of cross-pollination that happens between all these different programs. You know, every single one of our corporate partners, everyone we deal with, they all have a customer. And so technologies we're looking at in the retail program, you know, we're basically looking at all technologies influencing the consumer's path to purchase are relevant. And so we see a lot of our startups participating in multiple programs just to get those different audiences. And also even our corporate partners will, you know, like to peek into different industries and pull innovations from those areas. You know, something that could be working in the travel industry could certainly be applicable to the retail industry or fashion industries. And so we love the volume and the diversity of all the different startups, corporations, investors, and all the other, you know, players in our programs, all the views that they bring to the table.
So it sounds like you have a really well built out ecosystem. And then, you know, from what I understand, you also have a fairly international reach. I mean, you have an international presence that I don't necessarily associate with, you know, most accelerator programs.
Absolutely. No, our founder and CEO, Saeed Hamidi, he actually has a bottled water company that employs, I think, around 800 people in Spain. You know, he's got a plastics and packaging company that's multinational based out of Mexico. You know, we currently have about 17 locations and joint ventures all over the world. And so we're definitely sourcing investment opportunities from all over. And we've implemented a bit of a hub and spoke model, where, you know, we don't try to recreate Silicon Valley, you know, necessarily. We really do believe that Silicon Valley is definitely something special, and it does have such a great amount of momentum and capital, smart capital here. But we love going around the world and sowing seeds, you know. In Europe, for example, we're launching a program, as you know, in Paris, but also in Stuttgart in Germany, in partnership with Mercedes. Daimler Mercedes Benz. And, you know, our goal in all these locations, you know, one, we'll go to the universities and we'll attract interns and we'll speak at their events, we'll mentor, we'll advise, we'll judge business plan competitions, you know, really promoting entrepreneurship at the university level. So our hope is that, you know, 2, 3, 4 years later, we'll start to see some entrepreneurs coming out of those universities. And our experience has definitely reinforced that. You know, in Europe especially, I think there are literally, you know, 4 venture capitalist firms in Germany. And so, but all the money we find is held actually in the family offices. And we're owned by basically a family office. We invest from a private family fund. And so we do a lot to promote the opportunities in startup technology investment among family offices. And so we really do what we can to bring the spirit of Silicon Valley, you know, to all the locations that we operate in. And frankly, the talent is incredible all over the world. And, you know, the majority of the startups we work with here in Silicon Valley, they're not from the United States. You know, I think Silicon Valley is definitely still the best place, you know, to find really great, original, new technologies. But that being said, they come from all over the world. They're just attracted to Silicon Valley, and they go back to their home countries. And our hope is that, not only can we help a startup from Korea enter the US market, but we hope that we can help them enter the French market and the European market by way of our Plug and Play Lafayette and all of our different partnerships. So we really try to make our programs as global as possible.
So when you said family office, can you explain to me what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really amazing story of the Amidi family. They were a very prominent manufacturing family. They actually manufactured shoes in Iran. And in the 1979 revolution, the family fled Iran and came to here, to Silicon Valley, and started over. You know, a lot of their assets were nationalized and they had to rebuild. And so this was in the early 80s. And so the family, they started a commercial real estate practice. They started buying up real estate, most notably on University Avenue in Palo Alto. Our CEO, Saeed, he started a plastics and packaging business, buying and selling polyethylene and polypropylene from ExxonMobil, you know, for the past 30 years. He started a bottled water company in the 1990s. He launched joint ventures all over the world to bring bottled water to various locations, and one of the most successful ones is actually in Spain. And so today, when that company actually has the greatest market share of bottled water delivery in Spain. And so the family, you know, another business that the family started was Persian rugs. And so it's funny, all these experiences actually came together to create Plug and Play, because, you know, in the 90s, basically, Saeed was, he owned a building in Palo Alto that came to be known as the Karma property. And that's where Google went from 3 to 50 people. Max Levchin and Peter Thiel moved in. And the story goes that Saeed's brother didn't trust him to pay rent. And so he asked for 2 years advance rent, 1 year in cash, 1 year in equity. And that's how the family ended up investing in PayPal. You know, another story goes that Saeed's father in the Persian rug store, also in University Avenue, spent, you know, a number of hours negotiating over a Persian rug with Andy Rubin. And at the end of the negotiation, Saeed's father said, you know, we need to invest in that guy's company. And that company was Danger, which was actually the predecessor to Android. It was one of the first smartphone platforms. And so the family invested, I think, around $400,000 into Danger. And that was later acquired by Microsoft for about $500 million. And so just by being in the right place at the right time and just having that entrepreneurial spirit, they were able to completely, you know, rebuild their family, essentially, and begin investing in startups. And initially, it was kind of a hobby. I think they were making maybe 5 or 10 investments per year. And, you know, the technology bubble burst in 2000. Things were quiet. But then in 2006, Saeed bought the former headquarters of Philips Semiconductor in the U.S. Here in Sunnyvale. So it's a huge 180,000 square foot complex. Today we have anywhere from 300 to 400 startups working here at any one time. And, you know, another component is that, you know, running the Persian rug store, they got to know a lot of the venture capitalists who would buy Persian rugs. And that's how they ended up building a network of friends in the venture capital community. And, you know, they would co-invest with them. Saeed would come across a startup that intuitively he thought could execute, but he would ask his venture capital friends to put it through their due diligence channels. And if the VC would lead the round, they would let Saeed participate. And in 2006, when we started Plug and Play, the first thing we did was we engaged the venture capital community. We brought them in for what we call deal review sessions. These are 2-hour sessions where 4 startups each gave a 30-minute presentation. And we would just look at startups together. And if there was a startup that the venture capitalist was excited about and we were also excited about, we would co-invest.
Let me cut in with a real basic question for you, because okay. I think some people listening are really at the early stage of their entrepreneurial journey. And they're building companies and they're trying to figure out how they could fit into this funding ecosystem. So for them, can you break down for me? I mean, you're talking about VCs and accelerators, team members being in the same room and both investing at the same time. Like, how can you distill for me how they're different and what an early stage entrepreneur should know about approaching one of those different entities? Like, why they should pick one or the other, or why one makes sense for them and another not?
Yeah, absolutely. You mean accelerators versus investors and just distinguishing among different VCs and that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, and I think even just the really basic, you know, why would you have a VC and an accelerator working to fund the same company at the same time? And what is really the distinction between the two? So listeners understand that one.
Sure. I mean, you know, there are a few distinctions. I mean, I think between accelerators and VCs is typically stage. So accelerators tend to be on the earlier stage. They're providing smaller amounts of money, but many more non-monetary resources in addition to that to just really get things started. I mean, it's the highest risk way of investing is investing in these very new ventures. And so, you know, working with the venture capitalists, they're typically Series A and beyond. You know, they have very large funds that they need to spend, essentially, and they need to spend wisely, you know, where they're making typically, you know, $1 million plus investments. You know, I guess advice that I would give to anyone looking for investment and for capital is really go after people who you click with. You know, it's not just about the money. It's really a marriage in a way, you know, where even for the investments that we make, we have kind of a unique model in that we are stage agnostic, and particularly with our corporate involved programs. And we have to be stage agnostic in order for the corporations to see some value from working with us. And so we realize that later stage companies that have raised that VC money and have many employees and have traction in the market already, those are the ones that are going to help the corporations see some value, you know, and really see some traction early on so that they can keep their boards happy. It's also good for us in that we create goodwill with the later stage companies. We've seen many examples where companies get acquired and then the founders come back to us and approach us with their next venture as an investment opportunity. We've had a lot of really great portfolio companies come from people we've built relationships with over a number of years. And they also mentor our earlier stage companies. And so, you know, when going out and finding an investor, no matter who it is, whether it's an accelerator, whether it's a venture capitalist, you know, an angel investor, make sure you like them. You know, make sure that you really have rapport. Make sure that there's strategic value that comes with their money, because there's a lot of money out there. And in a way, it's a bit of a commodity. And if you just raise money from the first person who gives it to you, I mean, that person can ruin your company. And you really want to make sure you have a good relationship and that investor can bring a lot of non-monetary value to your company. And so, again, whether it's accelerator or VC, doesn't really matter. You know, a big part of our model is that we try to help startups raise money from venture capitalists, and that's the whole point of our program. And I will say we do have a good track record. About 70% of our portfolio companies go on to raise another round of funding, which is, in many cases, the primary focus of our programs. Does that answer your question? It is a really broad question. You know, is that the kind of answer you're looking for?
Yeah, well, and I think what I assume with the distinction is that, and you're kind of alluding to this, but with an accelerator, you're coming in as a company and you're getting the benefit of guidance and help and assistance in a sort of seemingly more formalized way than you would necessarily with a venture relationship. I mean, mm-hmm. The programs seem to be more, and maybe it's just that they're on a timeline, but there seem to be some real differences in what the day-to-day relationship is like, the money aside.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's so funny. We're seeing a lot of venture capitalists start their own little accelerators and incubators, and we kind of laugh, you know, because a lot of VCs are finding themselves in a position where they're competing with these accelerators. And granted, some accelerators are good, some are bad. Some VCs are good, some are bad. And that's why, in terms of distinguishing who you should take money from, you should really get to know the people, make sure you like them, and also make sure that they're providing value in terms of introductions and connections that they can make, you know? And that's the key part of our program. I think what's strongest about us is our business development capabilities. A lot of startups may hire consultants or other people to help with business development, and that's our core competency is helping these startups get their first customers and get access to not only the corporations, but the right people at these corporations. So, I think you asked, what's the best way for a startup to distinguish that? And, just do your research. I think you can really get a lot from speaking to the partners at a firm, going to events that they may host. We're all about the relationship and the face-to-face. And that's why we host so many events. We love really combining people in a room to get to know each other and building networks. And so I'd say just going to events hosted by these firms and seeing, looking at events and seeing who's speaking and really planning out, who you plan to talk to and reaching that out ahead of time and scheduling meetings, at the events is how we've seen the most success.
Well, that's
in
that's,
connecting with these people.
That's wonderful advice. And I want to get into in a minute, a little bit later in the show, some specific advice you might have around the Lafayette Plug and Play program that's going to be launching in September. But before I get into that, I wanted to ask you about you. We've heard a lot about Plug and Play and the history of the company and the family behind it. How did you get involved? You were involved very early on. What drew you to this type of work?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely a very curvy path. I graduated college and with a degree in finance, and I was kind of all over the place. I was a loan counselor and a home builder. I worked for Charles Schwab as a broker. I worked in mutual funds. And, at the time, it was a very unstable market. And I knew that things were going to go downhill very quickly, probably 2 years before it actually happened, just because I was in the thick of it. And I moved from Colorado to California to actually be with my now husband. And greatest move I've ever made. It's just really an incredible place to be. I was in finance. I just got out of it. The first job I got was actually at a telecom company where I was knocking on doors in office buildings, selling telecom service. And I did that for 9 months, and it was hands down the hardest job I've ever had, knocking on doors and just that constant rejection. It was just brutal, getting kicked out of buildings.
Oh my God.
It's horrible. I mean, I remember getting kicked out of a building and I was so upset. And I talked to my dad, and my dad was like, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, and you just gotta keep going, get back on that horse and keep going. And Plug and Play was actually my biggest client when I worked at the telecom company. And so I was sitting in the lobby waiting to take my client out to lunch, and our CEO walked by, and he was in the process of hiring basically young people and to just get this accelerator going. And I basically, I had a job that afternoon, which was pretty incredible. I interviewed with our COO at the time, and yeah, it was a pretty crazy process. But I started the following Monday, and haven't looked back. And it's interesting. My earlier days in my 20s, I definitely bounced around from job to job, and it was because I could. The market was good enough for that. And they say that the best startups, come out of recessions. Like Google, et cetera. And honestly, I'm really thankful that I couldn't find a job, or there just weren't jobs available after I started at Plug and Play, because it was hard. It was really hard getting my part of the business up and running. So I came on to do corporate relationships. And at the time, it was more like, we have this event space, let's sell sponsorships for our events. We did what we call expos, which are startup pitching events. And it was my job to just get sponsorship for it. And it was hard. It's hard selling something that doesn't really exist, an audience that doesn't exist. And you just, every day you're throwing stuff against the wall and it rarely sticks, but if you do it long enough, eventually a product emerges. And because it was such a quiet, rough period, I think from 2008 to 2010, that really forced me to build this and to create the momentum that I needed to create. And so, so it's been a really interesting 8 years. I think I've had 4 different jobs or chapters, in our corporate department. Essentially our corporate department has gone from, maybe 10% of our revenue to about 70% of our revenue and kind of the most important part of our business. You know, we've seen really great things from engaging with the corporate community, and that's been our unique position, where we're a little unique in terms of our investment, in that since we're investing from a private family fund, we're not really accountable to other investors. So most accelerators, most venture capitalist funds, they raise money from other people and they're accountable to those people for returns. And what's nice is that because we're accountable just to ourselves for our own returns, we've been free to really be complementary to corporations, where the idea is corporation comes to us, they tell us, you know, these are our technology gaps, these are our horizons, this is what we're looking for. And our position is, if we can go out and find a startup that's of strategic interest to a Panasonic or a Gallery Lafayette or to a Daimler, that's probably a good investment opportunity for us. You know, if we can help that startup get its first customer, and that's, we definitely have some consumer-oriented startups, but we're getting stronger and stronger, at least with enterprise-facing startups. And so we've really built our investment strategy around, you know, technologies that corporations can engage with. So it's really been incredible. We tried doing a single corporate accelerator with a few companies. I did it with Best Buy, with PayPal, with Volkswagen. And, you know, we ran into issues where, you know, the corporations just didn't have the bandwidth to work with all the startups meaningfully. And it was frustrating for the startups because, you know, they're so excited, they got accepted into this accelerator, and they expect to work with the corporate name, you know, next to it. And that didn't happen. And it's just, you know, and the corporations used us and the program as a way to have kind of an arm's length relationship, just to kind of see what innovations are happening. And so we just felt that the expectations were mismatched, you know, on both sides. And so the next incarnation of my job and our model here was to have what we call a collaborative consortium of corporations nestled under a different theme, various themes. So retail was actually our first, where we were going after retailers, brands, and technology enablers, you know, serving the retail market, like, you know, Panasonic, et cetera. And we brought them all to the table to bring their own diverse perspectives. And we essentially sourced startups on their behalf. And to be able to have 5, 10, and now we're up to, you know, dozens of corporations in the retail space that a startup can connect with is extremely powerful. And it's made it so that we can attract really great startups now as well. And so now the fourth incarnation of our model is to take that model and bring it overseas. And so we're doing that in Paris. We're doing that in Stuttgart. We're doing that in Berlin, in China. So we're really excited about this model. It's really taken off, and we've seen a lot of success with it.
So let's talk about Paris specifically for a second. A lot of people listening would be, in theory, good fits for this type of a program. But not every company is a good fit for an accelerator program. And I want to give listeners a really good idea of who should apply to something like this and what you're looking for. And then just any other pieces of advice you would have for somebody who is about to go fill out the application online and submit all of their information. So just to start off, like, what is the ideal kind of thing you're looking for from your side, from an applicant?
Absolutely. So we basically, when we evaluate investment opportunities, we're looking at the three T's, you know, basically team, technology, and traction. And so when evaluating startups to accept, you know, one, they need to have at least a minimal viable product. You know, we need something with at least something that's developed, something that's what we call fundable. You know, because we are very strong on the corporate side, it's really great if these startups can, you know, have something to actually sell. You know, and in terms of the three T's, team is the most important. You know, we're really looking for, and, you know, of course, the most important in technology is to have a strong technical team. You know, if it's just one person that has an idea and they're outsourcing the engineering to someone else, you know, it's probably not the best situation. You know, we're really looking for at least two people, two co-founders, one of which has a strong technical expertise. We've seen the most success in startups, you know, with at least two co-founders, one of which is a really strong CTO. The technology, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's about execution. You know, the technology should be defensible, but we realize, you know, if we see a technology once, we're going to see it 10, 50, 100 times. And so if we really feel like the team can execute faster and more efficiently than the others, then we're really going to put our money on that team. And then finally, traction. You know, we are looking for people that have accomplished a lot with a little. You know, we had this really cool company out of Germany called Captain Cook, which is just a simple... Every day it delivers three new easy-to-cook recipes. And the girl had received, upon launching in Germany, I think she received, and forgive me if my numbers were off, but I think she received 90,000 users and downloads in the first month. And that's when she realized she had something. And so she actually moved to Silicon Valley, and she was one of our first startups in the retail program. And so we're really looking for that kind of hockey stick growth, you know, is what you're putting out there really sticky and working well.
Okay, great. And so in looking at this application and what is required for people to apply and be a good candidate, are the things they should already have in place that you think? I mean, whether it's like you have a great deck or documentation around what you're doing, or, you know, are there sort of practical things that you should be preparing before you start submitting all your information, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, an executive summary is key. You know, I think that's the most important document that you should have. I believe, let me see. Yeah, I'm sure you can find things online. We used to have a version. But yeah, get an executive summary put together so you have something. A deck is really helpful. We are going to expect you to make a presentation. Be prepared to make, you know, a 3-minute elevator pitch, you know, a 5-minute quick presentation, and of course, a 20-minute presentation. I think if you can, you know, have a clear idea in terms of what you want, you know, and really talk to a lot of people. You know, if you're coming to us with crazy valuations, I mean, we may turn you away. And so really have an open mind. We have a lot of great people on our staff that can give a lot of great guidance, whether or not we invest in you. And so I think if they have those things in mind, they're good to go. I mean, again, this is a stage agnostic program. And so we realize people are going to be all over the place. And in our experience, I mean, we have a company called Product Play, which is a couple of PhDs out of Stanford. We invested $25,000 into them, and they're one of our best portfolio companies. We've helped them sign a number of pilots and things like that. And they were super early stage, pre-seed stage, you know, to a T, but they had a really strong technology that was really easy to put out there, and they were able to sign deals with corporate partners like the North Face and others really quickly. So we're very open to just whatever you have to show us.
Well, thank you for giving us a little behind the scenes information and some tips and advice there. So we're coming up on the end of the show. I want to do a quick time check with you. Do you have a couple extra minutes for me to go through the final questions I have for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, awesome. So I ask every guest at the end of the show if they have any tech tools, apps, books, or even low-tech resources that have really helped them in their day-to-day life. And I'm wondering if you have any that you think would help young female entrepreneurs kick more ass in their day-to-day lives.
Absolutely. You know, I just read Hard Thing About Hard Things.
I love that book. Yeah.
Ben Horowitz. You know, because in that 2008 to 2010 time period, you know, and when I was selling a product that I didn't really know if I could execute on or not, I always, you know, what makes me feel better still today is I tell myself, you know, I will rebuild. And that was a big theme, I think, in Ben Horowitz's book, where even if everything just gets burned to the ground, I will rebuild. And so that's a really great book. And another one is Venture Deals by Brad Feld. It's a really good, just nuts and bolts book about just how to structure a term sheet and what to expect when negotiating terms, you know, with an investor. And so those are a couple of really great books that come to mind. You know, I'm all over the place in terms of what I read. I mean, You know, in terms of periodicals, I mean, Fast Company, one of my favorites. I think you're a contributor to Fast Company, you know, NPR, of course, and others. But, and then I think tech tools, it's really interesting. I'm using Upwork right now. You know, we're growing to the point where we need to do a new comp model, compensation model for our employees. And of course, I have no experience in that. You know, there are a lot of things that I have to figure it out. And so I'm actually using Upwork right now to find someone who can help me with financial modeling and all of that. So yeah, I think those are some areas that are things I would recommend.
Those are great suggestions. Thank you for sharing those. And I'm like on Upwork every other day for something or other. I think it's great.
Yeah.
So we haven't hung out in person before, but if we were to hang out all day, what would I end up absolutely loving about you and what would drive me insane?
Well, I'm very straightforward. I think I'm very reliable, and I'm also told I'm a good listener. So I'm very sturdy in that way. I think what you might hate about me is that I'm very reciprocal. I track things. You know, if you give me something, I feel like I owe you, and vice versa. And so I know it drives my husband crazy.
Are you like the type of person that would send a thank you card for like a thank you gift?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. My mom does that. And one of my friends was like, I'm in this loop with her and I don't know where it ends. And so, cool. Well, and straightforward is great. I love it when when people are straightforward about like important stuff, but also the little stuff, like they'll tell you, you have something, you know, on your face that shouldn't be there, you know, or stuck in your teeth. So I'm glad to hear the straightforward piece from you. If you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt and wear it around for the next 7 days, what would it be?
I will always come back stronger.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the whole theme of rebuilding. And, you know, it's like I have bad days all the time. And I just think, you know, what if I just give it all up, you know? But I tell myself, you know, I'll rebuild, come back stronger.
I love that. So thank you for sharing that. And I always close out by asking guests if they have a question they want to ask me. I feel like it's only fair to return the favor after you've answered my questions for 30 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. So you live in Charlottesville, is that
yes.
right?
Yeah, yeah, I moved here earlier this year.
Yeah, you have a family with two kids?
I do.
How do you manage it all? Like, how do you...
I don't know.
I just had a baby, and I'm losing my mind.
Yeah. No. How old are your children or child?
I have one baby girl, and she's about 13 months.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the insanity when they start to be able to move and and then just wait till they start talking to you. Now I have a 5.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old, and my son is constantly like, Mom, I think I'm going to need you to focus a little bit more when you're making my lunch tomorrow. He actually said that to me yesterday because something wasn't right about his peanut butter and jelly. And I'm like, is this really happening to me? I like created this person and now he's like the CEO of my family, but you know, it's great. But I don't, you know, there is no managing balance like solution that I've found. I think the hardest thing for me has just been getting over the guilt of not being able to do everything for my kids. And so I have, you know, that moment when, you know, I dropped them off at summer camp this week and I'm telling the camp counselor who's keeping my 3.5-year-old all day, I'm like, okay, so her babysitter's going to come pick her up because I have to work. And, you know, I look around and there are a lot of moms that are just, they're the one person that does everything. And I feel like I should be that person, but I can't be all the time. And so it's been more of an internal battle for me to kind of be okay with the fact that I have to turn to a lot of different sources to make it all happen. And, you know, I keep talking to female entrepreneurs about this who have older kids and they've kind of gone through this whole thing and they've come in on the other side. And I always ask them like, well, how are your kids today? How do they think about the fact that you were working and you were really busy and you're trying to juggle all this stuff? And I haven't had one person, I mean, maybe they're lying to me, but I haven't had one person tell me that it turned out badly. I mean, in most cases, the kids are very driven and entrepreneurial. And so I don't know, I'm crossing my fingers that the sort of mayhem is ultimately like a positive thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's true. Really, I guess that's my answer.
Yeah, you know, my mom was an entrepreneur as well. She just had her own basically repping business. She sold like furniture and you know, home goods and things like that. And just she worked so hard. And yeah, I think if anything, I hope that we can be good role models, you know, if anything. But yeah, I just feel guilty every day. You know?
Yeah, so I think that's totally normal. And there's no cure for it, but totally, you're not alone, let me tell you. Two times over, I can tell you that. Well, great. Well, thank you for sharing that and for that question. I appreciate that. And if people listening are interested in keeping up with all the great stuff Plug and Play has coming up in the future, what's the best way to connect online?
You know, just plugandplaytechcenter.com for Paris/Lafayette, but just go to our website. And yeah, our email addresses are all on there. So please email, tweet us, whatever. We're available. And come to our events. Meet us in person.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Great. Thanks so much, Lauren.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right.
Bye.
Done and done. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Candace. You know, it was like kind of an interesting twist there at the end. We got serious, right? But you know what? I'm so glad that we did, because every show, I want to bring you information and advice, yes, but I want to bring you real people and conversations that have a trace of humanity to them, you know? And I feel like that's where the interview went there at the end part. Candace, thanks for coming on the show. Good luck to anybody out there listening who plans to apply to this accelerator program. If you do, let me know how it goes. Would love to talk to you about your experience in the future and maybe incorporate that into part of a future episode. Speaking of talking to me, you can do that anytime you want. If you need media advice, by booking a 90-minute strategy session, you'll find those information, details about what they involve and how we can drill down on your media questions and how I can help set you on the right track for your media strategy for the rest of 2016. Find more information about that online at spiritof608.com/strategy session. I hope you will be here with me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it best, and it's the future.